Indeed.
Mark, I'm so sorry we're having a difficulty making a call out here, but we were able to take your call. Thank you so much for talking with us today again.
Sure.
And you're, of course, Mark Krikorian, the director for the Center, the executive director for the Center of Immigration Studies.
Yep.
And, you know, kind of just take a step back for our new listeners. Can you kind of, I know on the website it says low immigrant, pro immigrant. Can you kind of just lay out your organization for us and introduce yourselves to the people who haven't heard us speak before?
Sure. The center is a think tank. We're a research group. We don't do the, you know, lobbying, write your congressman now stuff. But we do, you know, research, this kind of public education, talking to the media, testifying before Congress. And we are the only think tank on the pro-enforcement lower levels of immigration side of this debate. And what that motto, it's sort of an unofficial motto, but what it means is a pro-immigrant but low immigration. In other words, another way of putting that is fewer immigrants but a warmer welcome for those that we do take. And the point of that is to kind of confound this idea that immigrant policy, how you treat people you let into your country, is the same as immigration policy, which is how many people you let in the first place. And you can have any number of combinations. And too often what we have now is a anti-immigrant policy of high immigration. Let in lots of people, but you know, don't let them get too comfortable. Things like guest worker programs, which I would describe as, by definition, anti-immigrant. You know, they're designed to take in lots of people, and in fact, there are proposals by both Republicans and Democrats to take in even more people as so-called guest workers, but, you know, they don't have freedom in the labor market. They have a hard time, they can't quit, or they have a hard time, you know, negotiating for higher wages, what have you. So anyway, the upshot is what we try to make a case for is a policy that takes in fewer people in the future from abroad, but those that we do take in, we actually work at fully integrating them into the American national community.
So, of course, there would be people that say pro-immigration and pro-immigrant would be those that allow people to come and work for a willing employer and rent from a willing landlord.
Well, sure. I mean, that's, you know, you can make that case that, but what that amounts to, though, this idea of a, you know, any willing worker working at any willing, working for any willing employer, and that is that's the vision that President Bush laid out in a speech in 2004. That is essentially, I mean, what that means is unlimited immigration. Which is essentially open borders. Now, it's not open borders in the facile sense of, you know, anybody who can cross can. There are people who actually make that argument. There's an economist, Brian Kaplan, at George Mason University, who argues that national borders should have be no different than the borders between our states. And, you know, there's nobody checking you, whatever you are, whether you're a criminal or you have communicable diseases or whatever, if you cross from one state to the other. And the contention there is that it's basically a human rights violation to even check people as they cross national borders. And that's sort of the extreme case. But what you're describing would conceivably allow for terrorism checks or, you know, communicable disease checks, those kind of things.
Let's assume it does.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So let's assume it does, but it would nonetheless allow for unlimited immigration so that the American people would no longer have the ability to limit the number of people who come into their country. And, you know, first of all, from a kind of a moral perspective, that basically rejects the legitimacy or the sovereignty of the American people. But from a practical perspective, you got to understand that, you know, there are hundreds of millions of people in the world who'd be happy to work for room and board in the United States because it's an orderly place where the police don't steal from you every time you're stopped, where you can drink the water, where you're not going to be beheaded as you're walking down the street. And, you know, if you're living in Congo or any number of other places, I mean, if I were living in those places, I'd be happy to work for nothing, for free, in the United States, in order to get into the United States. And that's, you know, that's a recipe for completely, for destroying the American labor market, so that essentially Americans would be competing with people who would be willing to work not even for cheaper, although that too, but, you know, in many cases, willing to work for nothing. And, you know, Americans can't compete with that, and they shouldn't have to.
So one of the responses I'm sure that an open borders person would first give, I want to get to the economics later, because I was able to see that great debate, and it was so interesting that you had, and we can post a link on our Twitter feed with you and Brian Kaplan and Alex Naraste at the Reason Institute last year at some point. But one of the things I know, and I don't think it was mentioned in the debate, but a lot of people talk about is this Pew study. The Pew Institute did a study that basically said during the recession, and we can pick apart the problems with the study, but the basic point in the conclusion is that during the recession, people kind of left the country. Net immigration went down at least, maybe it didn't go to a negative immigration number, but it went down significantly, and that's the check that we have. People come for work, and when there's no work, they don't come. So there are natural limits that are kind of on how many people that will come. What do you think about that?
There's a couple issues there. That Pew report, this is the Pew Research Center, and, you know, their numbers are pretty sound. I mean, they're on immigration, their perspective is much friendlier to increased levels of immigration. So, I mean, they do have a kind of slant, but their work is honest. So I'm not, I'm happy to stipulate that their numbers are correct. But what they found was, first of all, it was about Mexican immigration specifically. And what they found was that from 2005 to 2010, the number of Mexicans who left the country was about the same as the number of Mexicans who came into the country. It wasn't immigrants overall, because immigration never really stops. I mean, legal immigration, there's a waiting list for.
So it was a net wash from Mexico.
Just from Mexico. Now, there's a couple of things. First of all, it's just Mexico. Number two, it included several hundred thousand U.S. citizens who were kids in Mexican families who went home with their families. So that's not really Mexicans leaving anymore. I mean, those kids either are Americans or they're not. You can't have it both ways. If you're going to have automatic birthright citizenship, then those kids can't be counted as Mexicans, or they're not. I mean, in other words, which are they? So actually, Mexican immigration really was higher. Even there was a net Mexican immigration even during the recession. And, you know, that was a number from 5 years ago. And the other data, which it's, you know, we haven't looked at it specifically in Mexico or from Mexico since then, but the data seems to suggest the number might be going back up now. So there is something to it. I mean, does the economy have an effect? Yes, it does. Almost certainly does. But the number started to decline before the recession began, when the Bush administration started ramping up enforcement. So it seems almost certain, in fact, the Mexican immigrants themselves that people have interviewed have said as much, that it was a combination of a weak economy and stepped up enforcement. And you also you have to take into account that we still have various legal immigration limits that do in fact keep significant numbers of people from moving here, because if we didn't have them, then we would have far more people coming here than do already. So I take your point. The economy does have an impact, but it's not such that if we got rid of all of our immigration limits, the economy would sort of deal with it. Because a lot of people, if they could do so, would come here regardless of the economy. Germany, for instance, found that when they ended their guest worker program from Turkey when the oil shock happened in the early 70s, they figured everybody would leave. you know, the people would finish their contracts, no new people would come, and that would be the end of it. The Turkish workers would have made some money, Germany would have benefited from their labor, and everybody would be happy. Well, Germany has twice as many foreigners as it did when they ended their supposed immigration program. So, you know, being in a developed country, even if you're out of work, is often better, depending on what your country is like, than staying home. So Mexico is actually a pretty high-functioning third-world country. It's an upper-middle-income country. If you're in Honduras, but, you know, there's not much reason to go home, regardless of what the economy is like.
Mark, those people, like, say the person that comes here and doesn't necessarily find work, what do? They just permanently stay unemployed, or they kind of just, you're saying they gather social service resources as much as they can, and they never find work?
Well, they might, but there's a lot of things they could do. First of all, they might find kind of episodic sort of day labor work, where they, you know, will work a couple days a week maybe for cash. They might, pool resources with some relatives or friends until the economy picks up. If they have kids, especially if they have U.S.-born kids, those kids can get welfare on their behalf, but the kids aren't spending the food stamps. It's the parents who are getting it. So, you know, you make the food stamps that and the free school lunch and the, health care for the kid, the SCHIP program or something else. You kind of, and maybe even public housing, you make that, you sort of make that do for the rest of the family. You spread it out a little thinner. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things people can do, but, you know, really, you're much better off being here, no matter what your employment situation is like. Frankly, begging on the street, you're better off than being in a large parts of the rest of the world.
It kind of brings me to this next point. And when you talk to a guy like, well, Alex Naraste once said, I said, what's the difference between your and Mark's beliefs? He said something along the lines of that Mark doesn't take into account that the more people that are here, the more employment that's created. There aren't a fixed number of jobs out there.
That's true. That's a valid point. The problem is there's a couple of issues, though. First of all, the extra economic output that immigrants create almost entirely goes to the immigrants themselves, as it should. They're the ones doing the work. They should get the money. So there is a surplus, but it's very small. It is it comes from making American blue-collar workers poorer so that the wages of poorer Americans are lowered. The most recent numbers that George Borjas came up with is the less educated Americans lose something like $400 billion in income a year, but all the rest of us enjoy an increase collectively of something like $430-something billion a year, so that the surplus there is that 30 plus billion. The numbers will change each year, but that's the idea. So there's the kind of the moral question is it right to impoverish poor Americans so that everybody else gets a slight increase in their income? And then the broader point of more people creates more economic activity, you know, has a kernel of truth, but it's like most things, it's not always true. Bangladesh is loaded with people, has way more people than Switzerland, and yet nobody would claim that Bangladesh was better off than Switzerland. I mean, that's a kind of simplistic point. It's a point that's valid to a degree. The problem is it's often taken as kind of a religious principle rather than an empirical fact, which often is true but doesn't explain everything.
So, of course, I'm sure, I know you know the Brian Kaplan's answer to that in the debate is basically breaking it down and saying both eyes need to be firmly fixed on production and saying that more stuff produced means more stuff consumed. Production is what distinguishes the rich world of today from the wretched world of the pre-modern era. If, that increase in production helps everybody. What do you think of that point? He's basically saying that, you know, and he talks about how these estimates of economists that if we opened up borders, the world production would double because people could go to where they produce more. And the example that he obviously gave was the worker in Haiti who can produce 2,000% more in the United States than he can produce in Haiti because of obviously the infrastructure issues that are in Haiti and that here we have that can cause more production.
Yeah. George Borjas actually gave a lecture at the Cato Institute, I believe last year or maybe 2013. If you Google George Borjas Cato Institute, it should come up. It's on YouTube. And it's, you know, longish, but it's worth listening to. And it's, you know, Borjas is a Harvard economist, but, you know, he can speak English, you know, in his Cuban accented way, but he can speak English in a way that an ordinary person can, a reasonably intelligent person can understand. And he actually examined this idea that if people could move anywhere they wanted, then world GDP would double, trillions of benefit. And on paper, that would be, he said, sure, okay, but let's look at what the assumptions are. In other words, how do they get to this number? It's not just a, you know, sort of an obvious fact. If you inhale, you have to exhale, something like that, or a tautology, 2 + 2 = 4. It's a conclusion that results from several assumptions, which they never tell you about. One assumption is, he said, okay, how many people would have to move from the third world? It's not just one guy from Haiti moving to Miami. How many people would have to move from the third world to the first, to the United States and Europe and Japan, basically? And the assumption that is in these, that's in the calculations that they don't, that Kaplan and the rest of you don't tell you about, is that 5 billion people would have to move from the third world into the United States and Europe and Japan. 5 billion people. First of all, that's an absurdity. It's not going to happen. If it were to happen, I mean, nobody would want that to happen because the United States and Europe and Japan would literally cease to exist as nations if that were to happen. And frankly, it's not obvious that the productive capacity that currently exists in the first world would actually be able to continue with 5 billion people from the third world moving to the United States. And when I asked Brian Kaplan about this at another event that we spoke at, a couple of others as well, he said, well, yeah, they wouldn't, all those billions wouldn't come all at once. They would come a little bit at a time. You know, eventually there would be billions of people moving from the third world to the United States, but not all of them at once, which, you know, isn't really an encouraging or an answer. So I mean, the upshot is, on paper, that would be true, but that's not the way it can or ever would work in the real world. And that's the problem with people who see themselves as economists or who see themselves as studying economics rather than political economy, which is what Adam Smith and other people understood themselves to be doing. It's not some kind of science with people as just, you know, sort of computer bits that you can move around. It's a social science, like history or government or other social sciences, and it has to take into account the realities of human behavior. Just one last joke about that, sort of the view of economics that a lot of people have. There's a joke of three guys stuck on a desert island. One's a chemist, one's an engineer, and one's an economist. They have one can of beans, and they don't have a can opener. So the engineer says, well, let's hit it with a sharp rock at this angle and we'll be able to get the can open and eat the beans. And the chemist says, no, that's too hard. Let's just build a fire, put the can over it. Eventually the gas will expand. It'll blow the top open and we'll be able to eat the beans. And the economist finally says, you guys are all wet. He says, all you got to do is assume a can opener, which, of course, that's the joke. There is no can opener. And the problem with much of the libertarian economic analysis of immigration is that it comes out of this assume a can opener perspective of economics.
And so kind of in sum, is it fair to say that your position on immigration and CIS's is that if you open the borders, it's going to negatively affect low-skilled high school dropout workers and other low-skilled workers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And that's a, I mean, among other things, I mean, first of all, our take on immigration is that mass immigration is incompatible with the goals and characteristics of a modern society. That's both true of economics, but it's true of government services, of assimilation, of
security. Let me just say, let me just do that. The first one's real quick before we get off. Government services, I wanted to distinguish between arguments against immigration and arguments against welfare. So it would be, you'd have to make sure that you're sorting those two out, because you can have very favorable arguments against,
yes,
for immigration. But and then on the assimilation part, what's interesting, I know that Naraste quoted this study in your debate that how first-generation Americans from Latino America are some of the most patriotic and are more likely to say that America is the best country in the world.
You know, there's a lot of data points to look at with regard to assimilation. And the fact is that we're doing a terrible job of Americanizing our own kids who have a family background in the United States to fall back on. The kids of immigrant families, whether they're born here or they come here as kids, have to be taught that because their parents don't know it. Our schools are teaching them at best to be ambivalent about America. And, this is a dangerous issue when you have a political elite, a business elite, an educational elite that really don't like America that much, quite frankly. I mean, this is an unprecedented situation. And the idea that somehow magically it's all going to work out is a fairy tale that our grandchildren will be paying the price for if we fall for it.
Well, Mark, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for coming on, and I hope we can continue the dialogue.
Sure. Happy to do it. Thanks a lot.
Have a great evening.
Yep, you too.
Of course, this is the Logic Consortium. And that was our conversation with the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies out of Washington, D.C., Mark Krikorian. And today's topic, and as always, we try to get both sides, and we try to talk respectfully on this show and really see what the other side's argument is. And he obviously said at the end that he believes that mass immigration is hurting the unskilled worker population. So what we want to do, of course, is we want to have the rebuttal. We have Raul Hinojosa Ojeda, professor of Chicano and Chicana Studies at the University of California, Los Angeles, will be calling in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned. This is the Logic Consortium here on 88.7. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Logic Consortium here on 88.7 WLUW, Chicago Sound Alliance. And as we always try to do on the show, we try to talk about the issue from both sides. We talk about whether it be Israel-Palestine, immigration. And today's topic is immigration. And we just had Mark Krikorian on, and now we have Raul and Ojoso Ojeda. So right now we're going to answer the call. Hello, Professor, are you there?
Yeah, hi, I'm here.
Hi, thank you so much for calling in.
Sure, absolutely.
It's a pleasure to have you on again.
I'm glad to be here, as always.
You know, it's just obviously where everybody's paying attention to what's going on in Texas, and but it kind of strays us away from the broader issue of comprehensive immigration reform and what is needed for an enormous undocumented population and how we should look forward, as you always talk about. We need to have the perspective laws and how people can come to this country. But I wanted to really focus on an argument. We just had Mark Krikorian on the program on the first half hour, talking from the Center for Immigration Studies, of course, and he basically summed up his argument. And he was quoted George Borjas a couple of times, the famous Harvard economist. He basically summed up his argument as more immigration hurts the unskilled working population of this country. And that's really what we're – is that the main argument that we're hearing?
It's first of all, it's wrong. It's not true at all. In fact, it may sound like a good argument. Once you actually scratch the surface, the idea that somehow not giving the 11 million who are here a pathway to citizenship and actually deporting them, if you think that that's going to help low-wage workers, you're wrong. The reality now is that these workers are here. They are contributing, and they have actually increased the economy at the bottom of the labor market and create wealth there. And in many ways, at this point, deporting them would hurt everybody, particularly also the bottom of the labor market in a humongous way, in a massive depression. So, the problem is that the real issue is not an economic issue. And anybody that tries to make the argument that this is about economics is not seeing the big picture. There's no doubt now, the last 10 years particularly, all the research is in. Immigration in general is massive economic benefit. It expands the entire economy, including the low-wage economy, all right? And the reality of it is we do not have an overabundance of low-wage workers in this country. In fact, we have a shrinking low-wage labor market, and the fact that Mexico has been there as a source of low-wage labor that's there when you need it and when you don't need it, they move back, has been extremely positive for the United States to moderate that low-wage labor market. What we should be doing is making sure that as many people come legally into the United States now, the comprehensive immigration reform. If you have a problem with low-wage workers, if you really care about low-wage workers, the most important thing that you should be doing is two things. One, doing a legalization at the bottom of the low-wage labor market. That will raise wages for everybody at the bottom like it did 25 years ago. We know this. This is not a theory. This is a fact. It will raise wages at the bottom of the labor market. And the second thing that you need to do is pass comprehensive immigration reform that says that in the future, all workers that are going to be required at the bottom of the labor market, which we are, there's a huge amount of them, and we shouldn't really call it the bottom of the labor market. It's really the base. It's people that do the basic work of the society. We need them, and actually the labor market in the United States is shrinking and we're going to need even more of them. We should be, as the Economist magazine put out this week, recognize how incredibly lucky the United States is that we do have a ready state of basic workers, that immigrants that can come in and build up the society. So I think that argument is just does not make sense. If you really care about low-wage workers, do legalization, do comprehensive immigration reform. That way, people, all the people that come in at the basic part of the labor market can come in with better wages, with higher wages. The end is, that's it. And I think that, you know, frankly, the problem is that we have now lost track of that basic fact. And I don't think, frankly, that the anti-immigrant forces care one bit about what Mark Krikorian is talking about. At this point, it has become, I think, a cultural issue in the United States and a political issue in the United States. And that the Republican Party basically, and this is nothing new in American politics. There's always been this notion, oh, we have to keep foreigners out. That way you, people who are already here, natives, i.e. Reed White, your privileges will be protected. If we do not do this, there will be an overrunning of people from other cultures, and we will weaken the American character. There's another Harvard social scientist, notorious, which Samuel Huntington, that actually had, I think, the courage to at least say that. Because if that's what you really believe, that this country, unless it's basically white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cannot succeed, which is what he says, then say it. It's a cultural issue. And it's equally wrong, by the way. And he wrote the last book that he wrote before he died, The Hispanic Challenge. He tried to make this argument, you know, that, but, you know, I live in California where we show that that's completely wrong. Right here, you have a booming economy, and the majority emerging middle class economy is the Latino economy. They're the new people opening businesses at a higher rate than any other population, and they are buying houses. And what we're seeing is that the more quickly that you can bring people, legalize people, bring them into the mainstream of the economy, the more that this middle class can become solidified and begin to expand. The answer to inequality in the United States is, in fact, empowering the low-wage part of the labor market. That's what President Obama is doing. We've seen all the research is now out that the actual impact of DACA has been to raise incomes of these DACA recipients by more than over 100%. It's an incredible boom to the economy in general and to the overall bottom of the labor market.
Let me remind our listeners, first of all, let me say DACA is, of course, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, one of President Obama's executive action programs first implemented and announced on June 15, 2012. But let me remind our listeners, we're listening to the Logic Consortium. We're talking about the issue of immigration. We're lucky enough to have on the phone from California Professor Raul Hinojosa-Ojeda, professor of Chicano and Chicana Studies at the University of California, Los Angeles. We're talking about a conversation that we had earlier in the program with Mark Krikorian, the executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies. While people do, this is a very cultural argument. And it has come to the cultural debate, as you said. People are still latching on to arguments, and they're latching on to this that it's hurting low-skilled workers. And also, another argument that he gave was, if we open our borders, and we'd love to hear your response to this, if we open our borders, people from everywhere will come and just stay here because it's much better, and basically we will be an overflow of population increase, is what he's saying.
Well, you know, the fascinating thing about this argument is that everybody says, oh, my God, the border's broken, we need to spend billions of dollars more on the border. That's what the Republicans are saying right now. And then at the same time, if that's the case, then I have a very simple question. If the border is broken, why aren't 6 billion people already here? okay? Because the reality of it is, you do surveys around the world, and yes, everybody would like to live obviously better than they are, and many of them would like to be able to live with a much higher standard of living like the United States. But so, one or two things are happening. Either the border actually is working, and it's keeping most people out, all right? Or also that not everybody wants to be here, okay? You know, the reality of it is, what people would prefer is that there be some type of economic growth in their countries abroad, okay? So what's the real issue here? I think that what we have to focus on is that, this notion that somehow we have to, close our borders because everybody's going to invade here, it's just not true. In fact, what we know and has been the absolute case for over 60, 70 years is that the number one determinant of how many people are flowing into the country illegally, it has only to do with one thing, the unemployment rate of the United States. When the unemployment rate of the United States falls, that's when people come over. When the unemployment rate, like it just did during the last recession, rises, everybody says, oh, my God, there's no more Mexicans. They're not coming over anymore, right? So we have to understand that immigration is not about borders and people pouring into across the border. It has to do with the demand for immigrants in the United States economy. When we and the irony, the really interesting irony that I love to talk to my friends on the right and in Fox News is that, you know, the biggest drop-off ever in the history of the United States in terms of people crossing without papers along the U.S.-Mexican border occurred after Ronald Reagan signed the Immigration Reform and Control Act. Because what that did, ironically, is that it allowed the raising of wages in the United States at the bottom of the labor market. That the legalization of the millions that program did, what it did, it caused wages to rise at the bottom of the labor market. And ironically, that created a decline in the demand for low-wage labor. The economy started shifting away from depending on low-wage immigrant labor, all right? And there was not a surge of new immigration. In fact, there was a huge drop-off. In fact, we never, ever, not even at the end of the boom of the Clinton administration, did we ever reach the levels of apprehensions of undocumented crossings like we had in 1986. Really interesting, all right? So what does this tell us? This tells us emphatically that the immigration issue is one that is modulated by the demand for labor in the United States. It is not about people just pouring over the border, okay? And in fact, it is also completely incorrect to suggest that what the answer is, Seal the border first. The border has, we have added, $250 billion, okay, since that time to the border, okay, close to $250 billion. And nothing has changed in terms of the behavior of people crossing. If you could build a 15-foot fence, but if the unemployment rate in the United States is falling, they will find a 16-foot ladder and fill that job that is going unfilled, right? I think it's really clear. The data is there. It's obvious. Nobody realistically, none of the arguments in the Republican Party now have to do with any substantial data that anybody's put forth. The George Borjas information that you referred to is now 20 years old. And again, it was a very, very slight bit of the research overwhelmingly now coming back and showing the positive economic benefits. We do have a political problem, I think. I think that the particularly in the Republican primaries, that you are now having a situation where a lot of people are going to stir up, I'd say about, you know, half of the Republican Party is very anti-immigrant, okay? I insist it's not because they care about low-wage workers. I think it's because they care about this cultural issue. That's why they are very anti-immigrant.
And, of course, okay? In 2004 and 2007, the Republican Party, led by President Bush, was putting forward programs of guest workers and legalization for undocumented.
Correct.
So what's happened in the politics? What have we seen? And also, Professor, to wrap up, what have we seen? And also, how do we go forward when engaging people from the right on this debate?
Right. What I have been doing is basically generating good numbers. Okay. We're generating a research paper a week on every part of the country, showing the economic benefits in Illinois, the economic benefits in Texas, in Florida. Everywhere that you turn and you analyze the situation, this is going to only create better economic context for low-wage workers and raising of wages and raising of tax revenue throughout the United States. So that's the first thing you have to do is clarify, look, this is good. We are lucky, as the economist says. The United States is really lucky in the 21st century to be able to bring in these workers at a time when the rest of the competitors in the advanced industrial economies are shrinking, okay, and not being able to grow like Japan and even Europe, all right? But, I do think we have to – the problem is, that the Republicans know it, that if they continue thinking that they can have a future in this country, simply from a demographic point of view, it doesn't matter what immigration happens. The Latino population is already on track with the non-white population to become the majority in this country in a couple of decades, okay? It's already happened in California. It's happening in Texas. It's going to happen in Florida. Going to happen in New York and Illinois, and pretty soon. Look at Chicago. Chicago's completely demographic change, but they keep playing politics as if somehow they could argue that, oh, no, don't worry, white working class. We will protect you by keeping the brown people on the other side of the border. It's a very short-sighted, wrong politics, and it's going to, I think, lead for the next election and the election after that, to the demise of the Republican Party as a national party, and then they're going to have to come to a conclusion that that was wrong. There are voices in the Republican Party that are speaking up. The Bushes were one of them, all right? But, it looks like they're already being heavily attacked precisely for having those points of view.
Professor Raul Hinojosa Ojeda, thank you so much for coming on the program. We hope to have you back again to continue this discussion.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to be with you. Take care.
Have a great evening out there.
Bye. Yeah. Bye-bye.
And, of course, that was our discussion with Professor Raul Hinojosa Ojeda. This is the Logic Consortium here on WLUW 88.7 Chicago Sound Alliance. You can find our past shows at logicconsortium.org. This is your host, Jake Briskovich-Briskman. In a few weeks, on April 12th, we're going to be having a show about Islam. We're going to have an Islamic PhD professor at McGill University. And she's going to be talking about whether Islam is associated with violence. We're so happy to be here on WLUW. We'll see you back again in a couple weeks. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great evening.
Metal band name. patient curve.